Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robinhood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Thanks, Marshall, and welcome to Off Script. Today, we're not talking about theater. We're going to talk about books, specifically the writing of books, and how small a world that can be. Now, close followers of Off Script will know that in the last couple of months, my guests were Helen Klein Ross, an author right here from Salisbury, who has just published a novel called The Latecomers, about an Irish Catholic immigrant working for a Yankee family in Lakeville in the late 19th century. Careful listeners might also recall that I interviewed Jeff Brown, an historian right here in Salisbury, who just published a book called The Lakeville Crucifix, about an incident of anti-Catholic Irish in the late 19th century in Salisbury. The coincidence that these two efforts, one a sweeping novelistic tale and the other a very specific micro-historical incident in the same town, in the same place, occurring at the same time, seemed kind of astonishing and coincidental to me. And the fact that these two writers, who were completely unaware of each other's research on the same turf, in the same town, seemed kind of noteworthy too. So I've asked them both to come back into the studio with me today and to meet each other, I think, for the first time. So
that's correct.
Welcome Helen Klein Ross and welcome back Jeff Brown.
Thank you, Dan.
Good to be here, Dan.
And this is really the first time that you've ever met.
Yes, nice to meet you, Helen.
Very nice to meet you.
Because I first interviewed Helen, and then I interviewed Jeff. And after the interview, I said to Jeff, by the way, are you familiar with this book called The Latecomers? Because it deals all about Irish immigrant, which your incident does too. And you said no. And I introduced you via email. And I know you've been exchanging email correspondence about each other's research. So this is the first time you're actually here.
And the first thing I said to Jeff was, oh, my God, I wish I had read The Lakeville Crucifix before I wrote The Latecomers. But The Lakeville Crucifix profiles such an interesting story with so many fabulous details that it tells the story, and of course Jeff will tell the story, of something that does appear briefly in The Latecomers, something I had heard at a party and I just thought was part of local lore. So I sort of stuck it in. But it was not based on any historical research. I didn't have any historical research about the Lakeville Crucifix. So when I read Jeff's book, I thought, oh, my God, these are such great details. The cross is 12 feet high. The body is life-size. So I was so happy. I was in progress doing corrections for the paperback, which is coming out. So I was able to get those details into the paperback. So thank you very much, Jeffrey Brown.
Helen, Thank you. That is heartwarming, to say the least. I must say, when I read your book, I have to admit I actually wept, because it suddenly people on one side of the conflict were real people to me. One thing I realized after the book was done was that we heard from a lot of individuals with opinions on the Protestant side or on the Puritan side, and all we heard of, the only speaking role in my book, really, was Father Lynch. Hmm. Everybody else was amorphous, just a mass of.
You two guys could clearly have the conversation going on, but just for people who might not have heard the other interviews, we've got to set it up a little bit for them. So just briefly, each of you, if you could, just tell us what the thrust of your novel is, Helen, and Jeffrey, could you just briefly describe the incident so that the listeners can really get to really appreciate what you're going to be talking about?
So why don't you describe it first, Jeffrey, because your incident comes up in my story.
Sure. The incident of the Lakeville Crucifix basically was not a terribly complicated thing. The priest in 1882 of St. Mary's Church in Lakeville, Connecticut, decided to erect a life-size crucifix on the front, in the front yard facing downtown Lakeville. By the following year, a number of local Protestants were highly irate that this religious imposition of faith that they had been told to, they had heard demonized all their lives, was in their face. And they protested, and the parishioners of St. Mary's boycotted the merchants, and it went on with insult or incident on top of incident, and somehow ended up on the front page of the New York Times. And then after a while, it just sort of quieted down, and then 5 or 6 years later, the priest took the cross down.
And Helen, the latecomers?
Picture, it's a few, it's like a decade later, and Bridie, an Irish immigrant girl who comes over from Ireland at the age of 16, makes her way to Connecticut to work in a, quote, big house of Sarah Hollingworth, whose family is well-to-do in Lakeville, Connecticut. So Bridie is an Irish housekeeper there, and I do go into some of the sentiment of what it was like to be an Irish immigrant back in the day. Sarah and Bridie share a child, which is kind of the heart of my novel. The way that happens is part of the story. But one of the things Sarah worries about is that Bridie might be bringing Irish ways to this child. Nothing wrong with that, except the child, her child, must live in a very different world. And it's the world of being on top. And the Protestant, the moneyed Protestant world really needed a different kind of preparation than Sarah worried Bridie was giving her son.
You both have very unique local reasons, though, why you wrote your books. Helen, what is the reason that really prompted the latecomers?
So my book is prompted by myself and my husband, Donald Ross, buying a house in Lakeville, Connecticut in 2012. The house had been lived in by a family that Jeffrey Brown profiles in his book. And I learned a lot about the Holly family. It was a governor of Connecticut, Governor Holly, who you talk about in the book as being on the Protestant side of this issue. So being in that house, we bought the house when it needed a lot of work. And so working with Rob Anderson and Ellen Burcroft, we were able to bring the house back to its former glory. So I spent a couple years in the house imagining and hearing stories in its walls. So I wondered, for instance, Frank Gerritsen was the architect, and he there was only one entrance to the kitchen. It was a very narrow entrance through a butler's pantry. He said, because if you lived in the house on the upstairs floor, you didn't need to go to the kitchen because your servants worked in the kitchen. So naturally, you know, we didn't have that kind of an arrangement. So I started to wonder, like, who are these people? Who was living in the service quarters? Who went through this narrow hallway? And that's really where the book began.
Let me just comment. The walls give up the truth.
Bingo.
So, Jeff, how did you happen on the incident called the Lakeville Crucifix?
Well, two ways. Gene McMillan, a town historian, had been pumping me for oral history, which I figure when you get to be a certain age and you start being asked for oral history, you know that you're a certain age. And she asked me about the Lakeville Crucifix. And I said, well, I've heard of it, but I don't know too much about it. But it's kind of intriguing. And I started doing a little bit of research. She said, well, find out about it. So I started doing a little research. And at the same time, I was working on a history of Trinity Episcopal Church in Lime Rock. And my approach to writing a church history is that you write a lot about what happens outside the church, probably more than happens within, because otherwise it's nothing but a chronicle. Anyway, I had the more I found on the Lakeville Crucifix and the more I folded into this increasingly voluminous parish history, I had a young woman working for me at the time named Eleanor Jenks, who was reading it for me and said, Jeff, this Lakeville Crucifix thing should be a book all by itself. And I said, oh. And the next thing I knew, it was.
In case you're just joining us, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. And my guests today are Helen Klein Ross, the author of the novel, The Latecomers, and local historian, a regional historian, Jeffrey Brown, who's written a book called Lakeville Crucifix. And we're talking about how these two wholly different and totally independent work intersect in some really coincidental and very local ways. Jeff, you come at it as an historian, so it's just give me the facts, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And you do, obviously, some interpretation and bring in a lot of insight to that. But you said something remarkable before that when you read Helen's book, The Latecomers, you cried. But that's sort of unusual for someone who's just the facts, ma'am kind of historian. Tell us more about that.
Well, one of the things that I noticed, my sources were largely newspapers, were largely contemporaneous newspapers that were contemporaneous with the crucifix incident. And now you can find all kinds of old newspapers online, and it makes research really, really quite easy. In collecting all these things and seeing who the reporters interviewed and that sort of thing, I discovered a lot of people interviewed from the Protestant side, and I discovered that the only person on the Catholic side that was interviewed at all was the priest. And I began to realize, I began to have a sense that editorially they were viewing all the parishioners of St. Mary's as this sort of amorphous blob of humanity, and who had this priest speaking for them and to them and so forth. And on the other side, on the Protestant side, you had individuals with individual opinions and with individual agendas and everything else. And all of a sudden, these amorphous people that you knew were there but never could get a handle on were living, breathing people once I read your book.
Oh, thank you.
So, Helen, as a novelist, okay, even though you did loads of research, fact-based research, as a background for this book, your work is one of imagination. So how do you react when you hear Jeff as a hard-nosed historian who weeps when he reads your book?
I'm so thrilled. Are you kidding? That's what the novelist wants, is to reach someone, to make them have an emotional reaction to the story. Because as a novelist, the story is really everything. I, too, did a lot of research. In fact, you say you did a lot of newspaper research, as did I. A lot of newspapers are available online, but when I was researching this book, I would go to the Scoville Memorial Library to the basement and go through the microfiche with, like, you know, things from the ceiling, flakes of paint falling on. And so now I'm so glad that the library, in conjunction with the Lakeville Journal and the Salisbury Association, has made every issue of the Lakeville Journal and other magazines local to this area, beginning in the 1800s, available online. All you have to do is go onto the library's website, push a button, and you can find out what was happening in 1909 in Lakeville, Connecticut. So a lot of my history was done that way, the hard way. but of course, as I put in my preface, mine is a work of fiction. It's not historical document. And so while I did a lot of research to fill out the settings, to fill out the dialogue, what were people wearing? What did people get married in 1910? I didn't feel the same necessity to be true right down to the month and date of things that happened. For instance, the Lakeville Crucifix story does appear in the Latecomers because Sarah is the Hollingworth family, the family of wealth, the Protestant family, hires the Irish girl and really feels that Bridie's religion is beneath hers because it advanced, her own modern religion advanced from Bridie's. And so Bridie's religion seems more cult-like to Sarah. It's not much of the book, but it's just a nod to, and at a party, I heard about this crazy, huge crucifix being erected at St. Mary's. So I used it. Not being a historian, I didn't have to wonder, did it actually happen? I thought, oh my God, that's fabulous. I'm using it in my work, in my story.
Amazing. You're talking about how the Catholic, the Protestant family, the Yankee family in your book sort of looks down at the religion of Bridie.
Well, they feel that their own religion has advanced from that.
But you deal with this, the nature of Catholicism when it came to late 19th century, when it came with late 19th century immigrant populations was different than the Catholicism of early colonial settlers. Can you talk about that?
Very much so, Dan. And this was news to me. And furthermore, having been raised a Methodist and having become an Episcopalian in the latter half of my life, I really had to admit I knew rather little about Catholicism. Eleanor Jenks was again very helpful as a good serious parochial high school girl. She was right on top of it.
And you could have called me. I went to 12 years of Catholic school.
Oh my God! Ditto.
Well, Eleanor was Eleanor.
Actually, you can add St. John the Baptist Kindergarten for me too. So it's 13. But anyway, go on. Let's get back to this notion about.
I went so far as to buy Catholicism for Dummies.
But let's get back to this notion, because what I wanted you to talk about is that Helen said that the Protestants in her book regarded Bertie's brand of Catholicism as a cult, which you really get to in your book. So
very much so. Well, you know, something did happen with Catholicism in America between the time when the first Catholic settlers settled in Maryland and were members of the British upper class who had been keeping their Catholicism very quiet and very much to themselves. They had managed, as someone said, to be true to King and true to Rome at the same time, which was a pretty good trick. They showed up. Their religious practice was probably much more like Protestant practice today. For example, the buildings were owned by the local parish board, which largely governed the way the church worked. There was a strong movement in America to elect their own bishops, which I think would terrify nearly anyone, and that's of conventional Catholic belief. And then along came Pope
Leo?
Pius the Ninth. Pius the Ninth, who, in one fell swoop, after getting whomped by Garibaldi, instituted the the Syllabus of Errors, which you good Catholic school students, I'm sure, have heard of.
Then you're coming at it from a historical point of view, which is not what every Catholic school kid is. We're more imbued with the notions of Catholicism, the heart of Catholicism. It doesn't have so much to do with the facts and figures of Catholicism, which is interesting to read about.
But Helen and I have the same background when it comes to being Irish Catholics. But what I really want to get to, George, is that the kind of Catholicism that Helen, you and I were familiar with was a leftover or of devotional Catholicism.
Yes, devotionalism.
So let's talk about that, Jeff.
Oh, boy. Devotionalism versus...
And that's the kind that the immigrants practiced,
as
opposed to the colonists.
Practice, but there was a reason. The Irish people had been so beaten up and pushed down for, I calculated 800 years before the potato famine represented kind of the last straw. And these poor, poor people who were, for the most part, illiterate, many of whom, probably a third, didn't speak English. Even with a brogue, they spoke Gaelic. They spoke Irish. They had no money. They were living. You know, a whole family would try to support itself on what potatoes they could grow in a quarter acre of land, or even less.
But this was in the 1800s,
yes.
Right? Yeah. So it's very different when my character gets.
I think it got better. I looked at your characterization of her return to Ireland, and I saw it looked simply easing the population pressure.
But even in 1908, when she comes over, mm-hmm. she has been educated by nuns. Mm. One of the points I wanted to make in The Latecomers is that a lot of these Irish immigrants were very well educated because of a whole raft of women who were interested in intellectual pursuits in Ireland. They were called nuns.
That's
and
wonderful.
They took hold of educating boys and girls. Many of the girls were educated to work in big houses. Mm-hmm. And to do that, they needed to know how to, be nannies and talk to the kids about stories and write. Bridie's handwriting is actually very beautiful because she has come out of what you're talking about, mm-hmm. Jeff, kind of this backward to elevating into a pretty good, I mean, there's a lot of really good Irish writers who were educated during this time. And who came out with novels and books. And that's one of the points I wanted to make about Bridie. Just because she's an immigrant doesn't mean that she was not educated or stupid. When Little Brown was doing the audio version of the book, mm-hmm. the first girl cast for Bridie had a very kind of lower class and uneducated voice. She was making her voice imitate what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I said, no, by 1908, Bridie was not that way. Bridie was educated. And
now, I have a feeling either one of two things happened. Either with the easing of the population pressure in Ireland, there were more resources to devote to education during that, say, 40 or 50 year period, you know, from, say, 1850 till 1900. Or even the historians writing about the Irish in the United States played down the
because it wouldn't be convenient for them. They have, it's called his story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was really an accomplishment by nuns, by women who were charged with educating girls mostly. I guess the brothers educated the boys, uh-huh. and so there was a big emphasis on education in Ireland.
Well, That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that, and it speaks more to the notion of the amorphous glob of Irish parishioner or of Catholic parishioners that the media portray.
Mm. Well, there was Nina. I mean, clearly there was a lot of animosity toward the Irish, mm-hmm. perhaps based on the Irish that you're talking about in the early 1800s who had come over without education, without funds, without means. Bridie certainly has no means, but she does have a consciousness.
Right.
But there was Nina. When she comes over, she goes to B. Altman's department store and walks through and thinks, wow, maybe I could have a job in America here. And she's told, nope, it's Nina. Only Americans can work here, meaning born in America. Foreigners work in Brooklyn. So.
That's wonderful.
Jeff, in your book, you make the point that, this... There's some reverberations between your history of this Lakeville crucifix and what's going on now with the immigration debate. And Helen, when you wrote The Latecomers, did you ever think that telling an immigrant tale about someone from over 100 years ago might have reverberations to the immigrant debate now, too?
I began writing The Latecomers on November 9th, 2016, because suddenly an immigration tale felt urgent. In a way that it hadn't.
That would be the day after
that
the election.
That was the day after the election, yeah. Yes. And suddenly an immigrant tale felt urgent to me. And that's the first day I began writing The Latecomers.
Hmm.
I have to say that the immigrant thing grew on me. I didn't get a sudden burst. I probably had written a quarter of it before the parallels began to strike me. But the fact of demonizing the immigrant, the whole nativism thing, and then being able to push it back further, being able to push nativism back to the point, the object of nativism traditionally in America at that point had been the Catholic Church, Catholics in general.
And it was also huge everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm. it was Vincent, one of my characters, was so happy to have been adopted by a family who wasn't a hyphenated American. Mm. They were just American. So this is 1910, there was a huge anti-immigration push because so many immigrants had come through in 1900.
That is a topic we could probably spend another 25 minutes talking about. But one final question, probably the most important one. How do listeners buy your books?
Well,
Jeff, go ahead.
You can.
I got mine at Oplong Bookstore in Millerton.
There you go. It's all, and also, go ahead, Jeff.
Well, the only place it's available, the only place my book's available locally is Dan Dwyer's
Johnny Cake Books. But you say you bought it at the Crucifix at Oblong.
The Oblong also, but Johnny Cake Books is a fabulous bookstore
That's besides the point. So Lakeville Crucifix can be purchased at apparently at Oblong and at Johnny Cake and also online.
Online, yes.
Okay.
Amazon, of course.
Good. And Helen, the Latecomers?
The Latecomers can be purchased wherever books are sold.
Ever sold, yeah. Good.
And also it comes in the audio version and a big type version. And the library version, so wherever you like to buy books. That's
great. Wow. Helen, Jeffrey, thank you very much for joining us. This is the first time I've had two previous guests who have so much in common and putting them together in the studio, so it's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for noticing.
Thank you for
having us.
And nice to meet you.
You too.
And thank you all for listening. Until the next time you join In and Off Script, if you've liked what you've heard on this program and others on Robin Hood Radio, go to the website, robinhoodradio.com. Go to the support page and express your appreciation. Until the next time you're listening in, be well.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.